Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Printer Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Hornsby, and today we're going to talk about something really intense, really shocking, really controversial that I did not see coming. SoFi, the private student loan company, also known for having their name on the LA Rams stadium, is suing to end the student loan pause. Before I dive into the details here, I just want to throw out a disclosure statement that SoFi has been an advertiser on our site for several years, and they, along with our other student loan refinancing companies, do provide really good rates, and we, Student Loan Planner, help partner with them to provide the biggest cashback bonuses on the internet. So I just wanted to say that in case, you know, I don't know, I just think it's smart and important to disclose any kind of potential conflicts of interest. But I'm going to say what I think on this, which is just, holy cow, totally unexpected. We have to think about this in the context of SoFi and the context of what it means for your student loans. So if you think about the cancellation case, what has that been all about? Whether or not MOHELA has standing. MOHELA is a not-for-profit servicer created by the state of Missouri, and Missouri is suing on their behalf. There's a big question mark as to whether or not MOHELA needed to be the party in the lawsuit there instead of the state of Missouri suing on their behalf, because MOHELA is a separate corporate entity. I've joked about this in the past, but if you think about MOHELA executives, what are their goals? If they are a not-for-profit, they don't have any stock incentive bonuses, they don't have any share price to worry about, so they don't care about that. What do they care about? My joke is basically, a MOHELA exec, I don't know any, so I apologize if this is, if you have one in your family, but I think MOHELA execs want to crush beers, be on the golf course at 3 p.m. and make $400K a year, chilling. And anything that takes away from that is something they don't want to deal with. So involving their name in a student loan lawsuit that's going to stop cancellation for tens of millions of borrowers, they don't want to have anything to do with that unless they're absolutely forced to. And so I think that that's the problem with the cancellation case, is this question about, does the state of Missouri have standing to bring the lawsuit on behalf of MOHELA? With this SoFi case, there is zero question that SoFi has been severely harmed by the continuation of the student loan pause. So these numbers are really shocking. So SoFi was originating $500 million in student loans before the COVID pause was enacted. And now they're refinancing about $50 million approximately of student loans. So you're talking about a 90% drop in the amount of refinanced student loans. That is a horrendous drop in revenue, and their share price reflects that. Now, why do I think that they decided to do it now? Why did they sue now over the use of the HEROES Act to extend the student loan pause? I think it's mainly because if you look at the writing on the wall with the Biden v. Nebraska decision, the administration's top lawyer was basically secretly hinting that they would extend the student loan pause yet again when they lose. And if you think about why that is, so the Solicitor General was asked by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, can you basically cancel student debt 10 years from now due to, quote, ongoing effects of the pandemic? You know, is that something that you can do? Because your lawyers, the Biden administration lawyer, said that in a different case. And she said, oh, no, we can't do that. That was only if there was another COVID pandemic. We couldn't cancel due to this pandemic because that would be too far away. But what that lawyer very smartly did not do is define a period shorter than 10 years that the administration didn't have the authority to act. So this administration lawyer, a different administration lawyer, said in a different case that they could effectively keep the interest and payment pause going after the end of the national emergency declaration on May 11th. So they're claiming that authority because of ongoing effects of the pandemic. So it stands to reason that SoFi listened to that case, and I listened to the case too, and that was my same thought, was that the Biden administration probably planned on extending the student loan pause when they lose. And if you think about the timing, when will they lose? Probably in May or June. The Supreme Court will come out with the announcement, and then the Biden administration would have a couple weeks to figure out and internally debate what to do. And I think what they would do is respond to the political pressures in their party to deliver on student loan cancellation, or at least appear that they're delivering. And so they would then, I think, try to cancel student loan debt with the same path, except using the Higher Education Act instead of the HEROES Act. And because they would try to do that, then they would say the same exact thing, which is, to alleviate uncertainty, we need to continue the student loan pause due to ongoing effects of the pandemic until we've had time to do negotiated rulemaking under the Higher Education Act. And the Republican groups would sue to block it, but then the student loan borrowers would probably get another year, even past possibly the November 2024 election, where payments and interest would be paused. So SoFi was thinking about that, and they decided a couple things. They decided that, you know, do they need to act? And then how fast do they need to act? So I think, first of all, they were already thinking about doing this, but they wanted to wait and see what happened with the Supreme Court case. Listening to the Supreme Court case, I think they believed that it was very clear the Biden administration planned on going back on their word yet again after saying this was the final pause. and making a new final pause. Because they've said multiple times in the past that something was going to be the final pause, only to go back on their word in the face of political pressure, right? And rationally doing so, I think if, you know, if you're in the Biden administration, extending the pause the way they did probably makes a ton of political sense. It probably makes a lot of rational sense, and it delivers important relief for borrowers. I'm not denying that, and I'm not downplaying that. I'm just saying that in terms of what they said they were going to do and what they did, it was different three times, right? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, whatever that saying is, right? So if I was looking at that situation that would happen, and then if the Biden administration did extend the pause after the Supreme Court made up its mind, guess what? Supreme Court term ends in June 2023. So say SoFi then brings a lawsuit in June of 2023 or July of 2023 when Biden extend the pause, the Supreme Court can't hear that case until the end of 2023. And the Supreme Court would not make a ruling until the middle of 2024. So if you look at SoFi's recent quarterly results, they, I believe, lost something like $40 million in the fourth quarter of 2022, and it's probably worse now. So if you think about where their trajectory is headed, I wouldn't necessarily say bankruptcy, but it's certainly possible that they could go bankrupt because you need, for them, you need a top of funnel of users to feed into all their other products. So if the assumption is so many people know SoFi that millions of people are going to refinance their loans, and then those people who refinance their loans become members that then go and purchase wealth management services and personal loans and investing and those kind of things, that's really important for them and for the top of their funnel and for their business results. They looked at the very well-known reputational risk that they would take if they decided to sue. And I think that they thought about, does it make sense to do it at this point? And if you think about what's true now that wasn't true in the past, there's a couple key things that are different. One is the House is controlled by Republicans. I think that's actually absolutely critical in their decision to sue, because if you had a House controlled by Democrats, SoFi executives would get hauled in front of Congress for all kinds of hearings. They might still get hauled in front of the Senate, but it's not, I think, quite as easy to do it in the Senate, maybe, perhaps, compared to the House. But, you know, you would possibly open yourself up to a congressional law specifically targeting your company as retaliation. So I think that that was part of it, is that they felt like they could get away with it in terms of filing the suit. And then the other thing is just, do the pros of the lawsuit outweigh the cons? So SoFi is the largest student loan refinancing company. There's a lot of other ones out there, right? But there's, you know, there's Earnest, there's Laurel Road, there's Splash, Credible, all these other companies. But I think that SoFi was unique in the ability to bring a lawsuit because they have the most resources and they're the least, what I would say, politically connected or political actor of any of the ones that could bring the suit. So for example, you know, if Earnest sued, well, Earnest is owned by Navient, so that would make them an easy punching bag in a lawsuit to say something's politically motivated. Or other companies have other things that they're focused on. So for example, Laurel Road also wants to do mortgages. It's owned by a big bank that has student loans as a small part of what they do. Student loans are a much larger portion of what SoFi cares about in terms of hitting that top of funnel number that they need for new users to flow through their product lineup. So I think that they looked at the pros of suing, knowing that they would definitely have standing, knowing that they have a sympathetic Supreme Court in terms of questioning executive power. I think they also, SoFi's legal team is pretty smart in the way that they attack the student loan pause. And I'm not saying that this is a good thing, okay? I'm not making a judgment call on that either way. I'm just trying to explain what I think the way the case will go. And then I'm going to talk about what it means for you. So the reason why I think they have a good case here is because they're arguing that the reason they didn't sue for the 7 prior student loan pauses is because the 8th extension of the student loan pause was the first one that explicitly did not mention the pandemic at all and cited the uncertainty of the Supreme Court case as the reason why they had to extend it. So their argument is the HEROES Act says that due to effects of a national emergency, you need to have the right to bring a lawsuit, but alleviating uncertainty from the Supreme Court is not one of the reasons given in the statute as to why the Secretary of Education can waive or modify the statute. So that's why SoFi is making that argument. Now, if you think about what are they bringing to the table to try to defeat the student loan pause, they're bringing everything. So if you look at the law partner who's suing, I think his name is Alan, I think it's Cater, I have to double check that, but basically he's a law partner at this really top-notch law firm, clerked for Anthony Kennedy and for Lana Kagan, is actually a Soros fellow for New Americans. So, I mean, guy went to Harvard and then Yale Law School, was an editor there in the Law Review. I mean, so this guy's like super impressive, right? Like, if you think about the Nebraska Solicitor General that argued for the plaintiffs in the Biden v. Nebraska case being a guy that didn't really look very impressive at all, like did a pretty bad job, like all things considered. This guy that's representing SoFi seems like he's the opposite of that. Super sharp, super on the ball. It's going to bring every tool in his toolbox that he knows to try to win this case for SoFi. And why did they file the lawsuit in the district court of DC? So if you think about why, my thought is that the DC district court, federal district court, has maybe the lightest caseload, and thus they can get rejected or approved faster, and then they can make it to the next level, the circuit court, faster, and then they can make it to the Supreme Court faster, right? So if you think about going to, you know, a large unwieldy district, like, you know, on the West Coast, like the 9th district or something like that, you have no idea where you're going to get scheduled. The legal arguments could take a while to get on the docket, right? So I think that part of SoFi's strategy is, because the Supreme Court term was expiring at the end of June, they needed to bring this lawsuit immediately as fast as possible after the Supreme Court case on cancellation, with the hope that they can get it in front of a judge as fast as possible and make it to the Supreme Court as fast as possible. And I actually do think that that's what's going to happen here. The student loan pause is too high profile, too interesting, too important to too many people for it not to draw attention. And when cases draw attention, I think they have a way of making it onto the calendar quickly and moving up the appellate chain quickly. I'll say, if I was a more left-leaning individual or a left-leaning Democratic appointee, I would want this case to take as long as possible to deliver the maximum relief to borrowers, because if they don't make it into this Supreme Court term, you're probably going to have the student loan pause last the rest of the year, because the Biden administration is going to try to extend it because they probably have the incentive to do so. You might ask, well, how does this affect me? So that's really important. That's why I wanted to talk about this in so much detail first. The lawsuit against the student loan pause, I think it very well could succeed, okay? And it very well could succeed in a weird way where they strike down the pause and then the Department of Education has to just go scramble to come up with a repayment, return to repayment plan out of nowhere. And how fast could they do this? Well, let's say that the DC District Court, you know, sets a hearing date, they hear it, and then they make a ruling. Maybe that takes 2-3 weeks. And then so we're into late March, and then they get it on the calendar for the circuit court, because the Biden administration and SoFi will both appeal, because you don't hire somebody with Supreme Court as their specialty area if you're not expecting to end up at the Supreme Court. And so then you go on to that next level, the circuit court, and then the same kind of story. Maybe we're like mid to late April, and then we get onto the Supreme Court docket maybe sometime in May, and with a case probably decision announced probably sometime in June. So if you think like what's most likely, this I think could just be viewed as, you know, SoFi making sure that the student loan pause actually ends when the Biden administration says that they are going to end it, because they don't trust the Biden administration to end it because of how many times they've said one thing and done something differently. So it could be that we could just have the student loan pause end as expected, and we'll have people start repayments, you know, in August or something like that. It could be like that. It could also be the case that, you know, this moves to the court system pretty rapidly, we get a decision pretty rapidly, and then student loan payments and interest start, you know, a couple months before we were anticipating. And that, I think, is the real risk factor here for borrowers. I don't think this is a game changer for borrowers either way because of the timeline involved, right? So it's very likely that if, say, SoFi were to win at the district court level, that they would put a hold on that decision pending appeal because of just the intense amount of work that would have to be done to restart payments and interest for that many people operationally. So it's very likely you're going to get that pause lasting until at least May. But after that, I think it's anybody's guess. So after May, I think, you know, you really could see anything occur. Really, it could be a whole bunch of different scenarios that could happen. Now that you might say, well, does this affect the new repay plan at all? And I'll say to that, maybe. So if you think about the new repay plan, it's going to subsidize all unpaid interest above someone's required payment, all of it, not just some of it. Does SoFi want to sue to block that? They're one of the few groups that would have standing to do so. I don't think they want to do that. I think that what SoFi really wants are access to, you know, refinancing individuals' loans of people that are, you know, 200,000 income, 200,000 loans from dental school. If they have to have somebody wait around a couple years before they refinance that loan, they're okay with that probably. So I don't think that SoFi necessarily has the same ambition to overturn the new repay plan as they do for student loans to start again. They know that the student loan refinancing market is going to be much smaller after the student loan pause because interest rates are much higher and promised federal benefits for student loans are a lot more significant. So if we think about what they're thinking, I mean, you know, if you were doing $500 million of student loan refinancing before the pandemic and you're doing $50 million now, they probably are hoping that'll be $100 to $300 million instead of what it's been. You know, I think that that's kind of their goal. And actually, in the lawsuit, what they say that their request is, they say at a minimum, they want all those who are not eligible for student loan cancellation in front of the Supreme Court that's currently being heard to have their payments and interest restart. So in other words, they're saying that, you know, if all the court grants is for the people whose payments and interest, basically people, high income earners, payments and interest to restart, they're okay with that as a remedy. So if the administration wanted to be super smart, they might say, okay, sure. Anyone who made more than 125K as a single person or more than 250K as a married couple, we're going to start their payments and interest. Hey, servicers, go figure this out. You know, yes, that would dump a lot on the servicers, but that is a relatively small group of people. It's maybe like 5% of borrowers or less. So it would affect a fairly small number of borrower accounts. And the administration could potentially do that in exchange for SoFi dropping this lawsuit so that they could extend the pause for everybody else longer when they try to cancel debt via the Higher Education Act. But who knows? This is very uncertain. This is something that, again, like one thing about student loans, you always have to be ready for unexpected things to happen. The good news is most of the time when something unexpected happens, it's not a disaster. It's merely like a factoid to know. And then when something major does happen that it does have a huge impact, it's usually something that benefits you, not hurts you. So if you think about things like the student loan pause, the new repay plan, you know, filing taxes separately under the new repay plan, all massive, massive changes. But if you have federal loans, in most cases, all that probably helped you. And if you think about, you know, these things that happen that can hurt you, I mean, things like, you know, not being allowed to sign up for the pay-as-you-earn plan after July 2023. In most cases, if you're already on the pay plan, you can stay on it. You don't need to worry about that necessarily. It's not necessarily creating a disaster for you. Think about rising interest rates. I mean, yeah, you could have locked in a 2.75% or a 3% 20-year fixed rate back in early 2022. But if you didn't do that, your rates now are 4 or 5 to 6% on student loan refinancing if you do need to pay off your loans. But when that pause does inevitably end, you also benefited from that 0% for a longer period of time. So, you know, maybe it works out. What happens next? We just have to wait and see. I think the one thing that I want to point out too is if there's anybody at the Department of Education that listens to this podcast, I am begging and pleading you to just go out of your way to harass whoever's decision it is to publish the IDR waiver FAQ. This lawsuit with SoFi carries a ton of risks for other programs that are not the student loan pause. So if specifically, if you strike down the emergency completely around student loans, does the administration still have the authority to do the IDR account adjustment? I don't know. I'm not sure if they do. So like the IDR waiver FAQ needs to get published so folks like us can help give more targeted guidance on exactly what to do when it comes to that IDR waiver. And if we don't get that, then we're going to have some major, major problems with people not taking action before the deadline that the administration imposed on itself May 1 for consolidations under the IDR waiver. So please, if you know anybody at the Department of Education, beg them to push to get this IDR waiver FAQ out. Hopefully it's already out when this podcast gets released a couple days after I record this. But if it's not, please, someone at the Department of Education, listen and publish this FAQ. It's so important. The PSLF waiver FAQ is super helpful. And the IDR waiver FAQ is absolutely necessary when we're telling somebody that's very doubtful about about consolidating their loans into the federal system to do so because we can point to the specific guidance. We think that that said, it's still the smartest decision to consolidate your student loans, especially if you have FFEL loans with the IDR waiver. That's clearly what they're trying to do is give the maximum benefits to all kinds of people. We see all kinds of evidence behind the scenes that our consultants study in group meetings where we see the Department of Education kind of like breaking their own rules and giving people extra credit that we weren't expecting in some cases. So I think that it's very clear the Department of Education has got the giant red, you know, easy forgive button that they want to press as much as they possibly can. So yeah, make it easy on them and consolidate your student loans to make it easier for them to grant you that max credit with the easy button. But, you know, we're going to go into a hyper period of uncertainty with student loans over the next 6 weeks. I mean, really, you're talking about 6 weeks until the IDR waiver consolidation deadline, and then you're probably going to have the new repay plan regulations drop, especially if the administration's worried about that, you know, return to repayment happening much sooner than they want it to happen. They're going to rush to get that repay plan, the new repay plan regulations out the door. So the problem is they had 13,000 comments in the comment period for the new repay plan, and they have to go through and respond to all those. And so Department of Education doesn't have enough people, so it could take a lot longer than we really want it to. We will keep you informed if you want to get ahead of the potential rush that we're going to face with return to repayment potentially happening much, much sooner. Remember that you can book a call for a time in the future without a credit card, right? So if you go to studentloanplanner.com/book, you can schedule a time now for end of April, mid-April, early May. I would highly recommend reserving your spot now, which you can reschedule or cancel if you need to, so that you just don't have to worry about rushing a call in. Also, we're planning a absolutely massive project launch sometime in May that I can't really say much about, other than it's going to be a really big deal and the biggest investment we've ever made. And that could potentially take away some resources from folks that want to do student loan consults. We don't think it will, but we think that's a possibility. So that's another reason why I would go ahead and book a call now if you're wondering about this IDR waiver, or you're wondering about the new repay plan or return to repayment. Definitely don't wait. Book a call at studentloanplanner.com/book. And also, if you want to leave a voicemail question for any of the, you know, your reactions to the SoFi lawsuit or the IDR waiver or questions about the new repay plan or something like that, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and record one of your questions for our show. We'll read it and answer it live. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week, and giddy up. It's going to be some wild, wild stuff happening in student loan land. So thanks for listening.